Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Welcome to another episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I am the Director of Church Revitalization for a ministry called Assist Church Expansion. This is the 12th episode of this podcast. If you happen to be new to our podcast, we release two episodes per month, one on the first of the month and one on the 15th of the month. Our conversation on the first of the month is typically between myself and Nathan Bryant, who's the executive director of our ministry. And we have conversations about the things that we're learning about church revitalization, church renewal, and church replanting, and some of the best practices that we've observed. On the 15th of the month, we release an episode with another third-party expert, someone who might bring some new perspective or a different angle to our conversations about church renewal and church revitalization. And today is no exception. I'm going to introduce you to a new friend of mine. I'll call him a new friend. His name is Adam Ehrlichman. Adam actually lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, not too far from where I live. He's actually part of a church planting team that's planting a new church in a community not too far from where I live. And Adam also leads a team called Build Groups. He and his team really help churches develop small group ministries that help their churches thrive. And I've been following Adam online for a while, reading some of his content and observing some of the things that he is helping other churches accomplish. And I thought that he would be a great addition to our podcast. One of the things that Adam helps us do in this particular episode is answer the age-old question, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Actually, we know that the chicken came before the egg. God didn't create eggs. He created chickens, but it's actually a different angle in the question. Which comes first, the small group or the small group leader? I think that we're going to learn from Adam here that investing in, identifying and investing in small group leaders, equipping them, training them, is actually the most critical part of your small groups ministry. He's created some other resources and some articles and has a book that you can learn from, but I hope that the next half hour conversation will be something that will give you some great insight in helping your church have a thriving small group ministry. Just a quick reminder that if you haven't yet subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, make sure that you do that so that you don't miss any future episodes. And please leave us a rating or a review wherever you consume this content, that will feed the algorithm of the interweb and more people will find this podcast. Well, without any further delay, here's my recent interview with Adam Ehrlichman from Build Groups. Adam, thanks so much for being a guest on the Revitalize My Church podcast.
Absolutely. Glad to be here today, Bart. Thanks for having me.
Well, Adam, you are a person that I'm just going to consider to be an expert in the area of small groups, small group ministries in church. And we're going to do a bit of a deep dive on the purpose of small groups, what a small group ministry ought to look like, how a church might implement one if they don't already have a small group ministry in their church. But before we get into that conversation, why don't you share a little bit with our audience about sort of your background? How did you end up as this expert in small group ministry? Tell a little bit of your story.
Yeah, it's a dangerous word and I get pegged for it often. And so a little bit of just my background. I'm originally from the Northeast. I'm from Pennsylvania, born outside Philly, and I'm Yankee. So always got to lead with that when you live in Texas and Dallas, Texas, where we reside now with our family. My wife, Anna, and I, we've got three rough, tough, tumbling, high energy, destructively graceful boys, Judah, Titus, and Deacon, 11, 9, and 7. And my story is I didn't grow up going to church. I was biblically illiterate. I got saved at 19, radically transformed, light switch moment in my life where I was confronted with the gospel and had no other option really, and gave my life to Jesus. And I've never been the same since. And so called to ministry a few years after that, did a few years of college young adult ministry in Lynchburg, Virginia. Did student ministry, did adult ministry, and then was an executive pastor of discipleship. And then from there, I have been a senior consultant and was founder of Build Groups 5 years ago, where we did that part-time for 3 years. And now for the last 2 years, been full-time, where what we do is we help churches with starting and strengthening their small groups ministry, helping them build out the different necessary processes that are needed using a framework that we've developed that, that helps them do that. So it's holistic and not missing any components and parts and pieces that would be essential to leave some unnecessary pain points for a church when they walk into this space. And so that's a little bit of my, me and my background there. The way that we started Build Groups, to kind of answer your question a little bit more specific, Bart, I didn't really have the intention or foresight to go, I'm going to start this thing and this is what I want to do. Ultimately, I saw myself always being in ministry and a pastor. And the Lord really blessed our groups ministry at the church I was on staff at. We saw the Lord double our ministry every year for 6 years at two different churches. And through that, we went from about 30 group leaders to 200 group leaders, 3.5 years, 10% of our people in groups to over 100% of our people in groups. At a church we're at for 4 years, and just saw God do incredible things. And I thought, man, we'll never see him do that again. And we went to the next church and he did it even faster. And so we're like, okay, there's definitely something here. And it was a group leader conference that we began, like 6 years ago. And we had churches from all around the country that started coming to this because there's nothing like that offered in Dallas, Texas, of all places, right? The mecca of the church conference world here. We didn't have something for group pastors and group leaders, and churches just started asking, hey, could we hire you to consult us on groups, you know, small groups ministry? And I was like, I guess, sure. And so, you know, no one's ever been mad at me. So I just thought, hey, we should keep doing this. This is really helping.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I we're going to get into that conversation and talk about the things that you've learned and the things that you've implemented in the churches that you've served in. I do want to mention that Adam is also, we're not quite neighbors, but pretty close. We live in neighboring communities. He is also part of a church planting team. And ironically, the church that is his sending church is actually just right down the street from me in the same municipality that I actually live in. He's part of a church planting team. And I will also mention, pastoring as a co-vocational pastor. And the reason that's important is that in one of our recent podcast episodes, we actually just had a whole conversation with Eric Hoke from ihelppastorsgetjobs.com about co-vocational ministry. So if you didn't hear that particular podcast episode, make sure that you go back and listen to that one. I think that was two episodes ago. Anyway, Adam, let's talk about small groups ministry. At a high level, how do you define small groups ministry in the local church?
Yeah, so that can depend really a lot on the context of where that church is located. A groups ministry can look completely different. A small groups ministry in particular can look completely different, whether it's in Dallas, Texas, or Boston, Massachusetts, or Los Angeles, California. And so some of the definition is going to be predicated upon the mission and the vision and the unique opportunities that God has placed in front of that church in their local context. But by and large, I think overarching, what you're going to see that's true of almost any small groups ministry is that it's going to be the main muscle, the primary mechanism, if you will, that's going to help cultivate and build community and relationships and fellowship within your local church. I think that that's the primary thing that you're going to see that it can serve and do. There are other byproducts and secondary benefits that come about from that, which is theological instruction and biblical literacy. They get to grow in the knowledge of who Jesus and who God is. And it can also be a very big, and I think it's honestly in our research and our study and what we've seen with churches is I believe that small groups are the best catalyst to mobilize people to begin serving and being on mission. So if you're going to define small groups within the local church, I would say it is the primary place where community is built, biblical community, not just any community, and also leads into theological, biblical literacy, and mobilizing people to serve.
Okay. So what I hear you saying on one level is that
small groups ministry is not necessarily a one size fits all. There's not like a textbook that everybody needs to read and say, do this and you have an effective small group ministry. However, there are probably some principles. So for instance, I live in a neighborhood that's all newly constructed homes, and all of the homes look different from each other, but every single one of them started out the same way, a concrete slab with some plumbing pipes and electrical pipes sticking up out of the slab. And then from there, the framework was built and then the rest of the house was constructed. What are some of the things that you would say are pretty much required or consistent, need to be consistently applied in a small groups ministry, regardless of what the mission and the vision and the context of the church is? What are some of the things that just really, if you don't do these things, you're probably not going to succeed in small group ministry?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we work and come into work with the church, we use what's called a framework, because it works with realities. That's true of any church in any context, in any city, in any country of the world, that the six areas that we help them focus on are discover, develop, and deploy new group leaders to connect people in the community with them, coach those leaders ongoing, and care for the souls of all of them. And that whole process starts all over again. Because
say those points again. What were those points again?
Yes.
One more time.
So six areas of a group's ministry: discover, develop, and deploy new group leaders to connect people into those groups with them, coach them ongoing, and care for the souls of all of them.
Okay. Three D's, three C's. Did I get that?
You got it. Yeah.
Just make sure I get that right in the show notes here. Okay.
Yeah. And we have visuals of it on our website at buildgroups.net, and they can go see the framework visual, but it's the D's: discover, develop, deploy, that's starting new groups. And then the other side of the framework, because it's a wheel, connect, coach, care, that is strengthening small groups or small group leaders. And so when we use that, it's really because what I see all the time is for decades, churches have tried to do the copy and paste model. They try to take palm trees that were, you know, birthed in Florida, and they uproot them. They try to plant them in Minnesota, and they go, well, why isn't this working? It died 6 months later. And it's not a one size fit all. It has to be contextualized. It has to be considered what makes sense for our context and our people. And let's make a custom process for where we're, and that's what we help churches do with that. And so, but the biblical, you know, foundational parts of what you're going to see is going to be to have healthy groups and a healthy small group ministry is there has to be fellowship. There has to be content. There has to be biblical content, or people aren't going to stick and stay around. There needs to be opportunity at some point for them to be contributing members of the group or into the larger body. And there also has to be fourth and foremost, you know, at the end of that, finally, an opportunity for sharing the gospel, multiplication, advancement outside of just what that group is there and then. And so fellowship, growth, serve, multiply, those are kind of the four basic. And that's what you see in Acts 2, 42 through 47. That was the early church when the Apostle Peter preaches the sermon, the day of Pentecost, the establishment of the church with the first sermon given. 3,000 people are saved, cut to the heart. And then you go, what's it look like to be the church? Well, directly following is Acts 2, 42 through 47. And it was fellowship, growing, service, and multiplication. Those are your foundational bedrock basis. Every group's ministry has to have these things.
Okay. So one of the questions I actually had on the notes that I sent to you in advance was, you know, to define or to determine what the primary goals of a small group ministry are. I'm going to say that that's pretty much what you just defined there, right? If we're aiming to get those things out of our small group ministry, we're pointing the arrow at the right target. Yes?
Those are your practices and your biblical practices you absolutely want to have. Now, I would say your goal can be more specific and different than that. And so okay. What I really encourage churches to do is something very tangible, because you've got all kinds of different groups. You've got groups that are more theologically or lecture-based type, that are more content-driven. You have ones that are in a circle and are going to be more communal and relationship building. And because of that, you're not going to be able to go as deep, because it's not one person who's studied very deeply and instructing. And then you've got groups that are missional. Like their primary goal is to engage lost people in the community or in the neighborhoods that they reside in. and to get the gospel in front of them and to build those relationships. And so there's, you know, several of those components, right? Content, community, contribution is kind of how I say it, informational, relational, and missional. Those three areas, they're all going to be present in the group or should be present in the group at some point, but every group's going to be more predominant in one of those areas. And you have to decide.
Let me pause you just to ask a question. This is just clarifying. Yeah. Are you saying that, like, in the context of a church, let's say I've got a church that has, you know, 60 people in it, and we have three small groups that have, you know, 10 to 12 adults in those three small groups. Do all three of my small groups need to function with sort of the same purpose and direction? You define three different types, you know, some that are more relational, some that are maybe more focused around maybe a teaching component, some that are maybe more missional. Do you suggest that they all kind of fit within the same category, or would you see diversity amongst those groups within the local church itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say it depends. It depends on the health of your church. If your church is in a healthy place, I would say diversity would be good. If your church is not in a healthy place, like there isn't alignment with vision, mission, and the congregation, if you are still working on getting those things into place, then I would say I would try to have a common purpose for all of your groups, that there is a common function there. You know, so that diversity is not a bad thing, as long as people are submissive and respectful as leaders and understand the bigger picture. But if you do not have that health in your leaders or in your church, like a size of 60 or so, then I would say I would wait for diversity. I would put that back and go to later, because I'm a huge small groups fan, but I'm also, like, I'm a rare breed. I'm a huge Sunday school fan. I think that they are best friends. I don't think they're enemies. I think they can collaborate together and help move people towards deeper community. And they catch people at different starting points of their spiritual journey. And Sunday school can do things that small group can't, and small group can do things that Sunday school can. But if they work together and they don't war, it can be a beautiful collaboration.
Okay. So in a church that, let's say we've got a church that currently has a Sunday school model or an adult Bible fellowship model. What are the differentiating factors between what a typical Sunday school model would be and what a small group model would be? How do those two things coexist without being in conflict with each other? How do we as leaders encourage our congregation to consider both as necessary for the church if we think that that's the direction we ought to go?
Yeah, absolutely. This is,
I asked you like eight questions in one question. Sorry about that.
You're good. I can answer them. We're good. So these are conversations I have every day, right? I have these type of conversations every day. A lot of churches that hire us are looking to go hybrid, to do Sunday school and small group, or they're doing both and trying to understand how they can work better together. And we help enhance that. And so, yeah, some of the difference between Sunday school and small group is Sunday school is going to be more content driven. Because if you're sitting in rows and you have one person who's doing most of the instruction, most of the speaking, my rule of thumb is it's probably 70% them speaking, 30% others, you know, contributing from the crowd and sitting in rows. Small group is going to be the opposite. It's going to be 30% of the leader speaking and 70% of the group or the members of that group contributing in conversation. And so that should really be that's a healthy mark to aim for as a small group leader, is you only want to talk about 30% of the time. You want to get everyone else. You're kind of like the point guard. You want to get the ball into their hands early and often in the group facilitation in the meeting. Whereas Sunday school, it's going to be, hey, this is more lecture. This is a little bit more instructional. And there are going to be people who feel safer in a Sunday school class. And that might sound strange, but just track with me. There will be people who feel safer in a Sunday school class than a small group, because in small group, it's a little bit more relationally risky because you're going deeper. But in Sunday school, people will get to the place where they want to go deeper in their fellowship and their relationship, and they will hit a limit. And so what I see again and again in churches is a lot of your first-time guests, a lot of your new people, they'll go to a Sunday school first because it's a little safer. And they get to know some people more to surface level. And then they'll move into a small group because they want deeper relationship. They're ready to make that step. They're ready to make that jump. And when they go to a small group, they go, wow, this is so good. This is, and they're in. I've seen people who were part of a Sunday school class for 2 decades join a small group and come to life in their faith in a way that you would have never imagined these people would have. And so that's how I see a lot of those two working together. Those are some of the differences, and those are the benefits that you'll see when those two work together. Sunday school really helps work as a connector or an assimilation type of mechanism to help move people deeper into community.
So I engage with a lot of churches that are sort of in this season where they have had a Sunday school or an adult Bible fellowship sort of structure. They've heard about, read about, thought about the possibility of launching a small group ministry. One of the questions that often gets asked, especially from lay elders, okay? So a pastor who spends time with other pastors, maybe he's even been in another church that has had a small group structure. One of the questions that other leaders will have is, well, what does small groups do for us as a church that Sunday school doesn't? What's the benefit for us as leaders to go through the pain of trying to start something new? Because especially if you're a long-time established church, starting something new can often be a little bit painful. If I'm a pastor and I'm trying to work with my leadership team, my elders, my board to move in this direction, what are some of the things that I can share with them that would tout some of the values or the benefit of having a small group structure in our church?
Yeah, absolutely. Small group opens the door for more people to be involved and mobilized sooner and faster and creates a longer runway. Other than like a short runway example would be going from a Sunday school class member to a teacher. That's a big jump. But small group introduces a lower step, extends that runway for them to go, yeah, I could lead a group and facilitate conversation. I don't see myself preaching and teaching. And so you allow people who are gifted in a different way to help facilitate conversation. One of the best small group leaders I know, his group has multiplied probably 20 times in the last 7 years. There's probably close to 500 people who are in groups because of this guy. Is the worst public speaker I know. He's terrible. And he would say he's terrible. And his wife would say, I cover for him when we're in public. He's not a good, but in a group conversational setting, it's incredible how the Holy Spirit works through him. So I would say some of the benefit is you're going to open up the door for more people to get involved. And when people get involved statistically, it changes everything. As small groups increase, every other ministry in your church increases. Small groups is the one ministry that affects every other ministry. It is the tide that raises all other ministry ships. It's just a fact. We have so much statistical research done and background information on this that it's not just benefiting the other ministries, that they now have better volunteers, more quality volunteers to choose from, that they're also more likely to get involved because they've been a part of something where they belong. They also increase the giving. What our research has shown us is that when someone gets involved in a group or they begin serving, on average, it increases that giving of that family unit by $2,500 to $3,000 annually. And so when we're like, hey, we will help, if we can help 20 people get into group or start serving, that's a really significant number for a small church, for sure. And I mean, for almost any size church. So needless to say, groups benefit the church in so many ways corporately. But then if you go down to the individual level, let's just talk about the individual person. Most people struggle to evangelize and to share their faith because they are devoid of being forced or really trained in how to have conversation with people they disagree with. And so as soon as disagreement comes up, it's very hard for them to have any conversation to witness or to evangelize. And here's my rule of thumb is like, if you can't get along together with people that you agree with in the faith of Christ in a small group setting, you have very little shot at sharing your faith with people that disagree with you. And so in a large way, small group is forcing people to engage in conversation, and it is a pre-training ground for them to go out and start to have conversations and build relationships with people who completely disagree with them on the most important thing in life.
That's a very interesting point. I don't think I've ever heard anybody use that one. I do want to back up to something that you mentioned just a minute ago. You said, you know, it's a big leap for somebody to go from being an attendee in a Sunday school class to leading or teaching the Sunday school class. However, you feel like there are more on-ramps for participation and in perhaps leadership when you have a small group structure. What should a pastor or church leadership team be looking for as far as qualifications of small group leaders? What do I need to look for? Who am I trying to empower into this role?
Absolutely. So this is probably the most common error I see churches make when they're trying to get new leaders. This is the most prevalent issue that I see in churches when they're trying to identify potential new leaders. They want to pick them and they want to place them, but they do not want to prepare them. They want to pick them, place them, but they did not prepare them. And so my conversation, my challenge to church leaders is, let's not talk so much about how high or low the bar is. Let's talk about what is the on-ramp to get them to the bar. And we can determine the bar, and we do that. We talk, hey, what are the expectations of group leaders? Expectations I held elder qualifications. Our leaders went through 5 months of training before they were, you know, given, you know, commissioned to go start a new group or to start help leading in a group. And so my real challenge to them is, what steps are you going to put in place to help do that? And so we've got a resource, a book called Group Leader Training that we developed really out of a pain point I felt for church planters who were under-resourced. And it was 5 trainings that we did over 5 months. We took over 1,000 group leaders through that training. And that's how we wrote the resource to help equip churches to not just pick and place, but to prepare potential new group leaders to become a group leader. And so what I would say is, whatever you're looking for, qualification-wise, you want to pick that out, you want to define that, and then you want to work backwards from that. You want to decide, all right, hey, if we're looking for a small group leader, then we're looking for someone who's probably pretty relational, who is more of a shepherd bone. If we're looking for a Sunday school teacher, well, then hey, we're looking for someone who is good at speaking in front of people, who knows their Bible really, really well, has good biblical literacy and knowledge. And so from there, it even helps you with the recruitment process to go, okay, this is what we're looking for. This is the type of training we take them through. Therefore, that's the type of person we're looking for. We're not just tapping shoulders with our eyes closed going, who, warm body, yeah. You got a pulse, come lead.
Well, in a lot of cases, especially in smaller churches that, you know, don't have a lot of options, that sometimes is the only, sometimes that is the only option for a church that might be struggling with saying, okay, we've set the bar actually relatively low, and we know we have to work people towards this. How do we set the tone for, or how do we actually even launch groups if we've never had groups before? How are we training and equipping people to lead groups if we don't actually have groups? What are some of the key things that you would coach somebody on in terms of getting groups started in a church?
Build the leader, build the group, and then you can add the people in. Most often I see churches do this thing backwards, and then it creates a really big problem. They go, let's gather a bunch of people, we'll start a group, and then we'll identify who the leader is, who's untrained, potentially even unhealthy. And you go, I don't know why this group didn't last. We had so many people that wanted to be a part of it. And so the most important aspect in the starting point for any group's ministry that would get started in any church, medium, large, small size, doesn't matter what size, you have to start with, how are we going to prepare the leader? You can pick out someone who has very, very low qualifications. I encourage churches and leaders to pick out and use, you know, very minimal qualifications to allow people to begin the training. Because if you are expecting people to just be ready to go and your training doesn't actually help them grow or prepare them or equip them over a period of time to be a leader, you're not looking for potential leaders. You're looking for prepackaged leaders. And if you're looking for prepackaged leaders, good luck, right? That's why we feel these pain points so often. And so I say, set the bar low on the front end, give them a training process of preparation that is an on-ramp to reach the bar of qualifications, what you would like them to be. And if you start with, we're going to get the leader, then we'll start the group, and then we'll connect people, you will be amazed at how well that goes, number one. And number two, how many you retain semester. So there's a lot of churches that start groups and they lose the majority of them semester to semester. And when we've done groups the way that, you know, using this type of a model, leader, group, and then add the people, we typically have 98% retention from semester to semester and year to year.
Okay, that's super helpful. We are just about out of time. You've mentioned some training and some books and some other resources that that you guys have created with your team. What other things can you share? Where can people go to find more of the stuff that you guys use with your training and your equipping of churches and church leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to buildgroups.net, buildgroups with an S on the end, .net. And or you can find me on Facebook, social media, something like Adam Ehrlichman. But yeah, you can go to our website. There's a ton of information on there about our books and our resources. Group leader training is probably the best resource to take a look at and to start using to get a group's ministry started, or even to just strengthen your current group's ministry. We have a lot of churches that do that. And yeah, go in there. You can learn more about what we do with our consulting as well, and even the framework, if that's something you want to refer to after this conversation. But you go there, you'll get all the stuff that I've mentioned and referenced in this talk.
Cool. Adam, I want to thank you for hanging out with me. This has been a great conversation. Adam Ehrlichman from Build Groups. I'm going to link to all the things that he mentioned in our show notes. And for those of you who've made it all the way here to the end of this podcast episode, thanks. We appreciate the fact that you've let us invade your AirPods or your Bluetooth or whatever it is that you're listening on. If you haven't ever left us a rating or review wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make sure that you do that. And if you haven't subscribed, you got to be sure to do that, because we're only releasing two episodes every month, one on the 1st and one on the 15th. But every once in a while, I throw in a little bonus episode. And if you're not subscribed, you might miss the bonus episode. So make sure that you're subscribed. Thanks again, Adam.
Thanks, Bart. Appreciate it.